Dead Bod Rap Pod. We are here. We are in the midst of kind of a Wu renaissance a little bit with the release of Mike's and Men. Hopefully by now you've watched it all, because it's like mad spoilers or shit coming up.
I don't think you could spoil a documentary.
No?
I don't think so.
Yeah, unless it's
all this stuff happened.
But you know, but if you haven't, for instance, if I were to go into depth about the Silver Rings part, which Dave hasn't seen yet, am I kind of not robbing him of the experience of hating Silver Rings for his own self?
Should he come to that? I find this so ironic, because you, like, 3 weeks ago were like, oh, people who don't want spoilers are babies and, like, grow up and, like, I'm not allowed to talk. Like,
yeah.
Now you're worried about spoiling Silver Rings of all things.
Unless it's about a Wu-Tang producer, though.
Yeah, exactly. This is the Wu-Tang, bro.
If it's about the best hip-hop producer in Morocco, I need to watch it at the source.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to rob you. No, wait, Istanbul?
What?
We're just fucking that guy's whole shit up. I'm sorry.
Silver Rings.
Holy shit. My guy, Ben Crosby.
Silver War Raider.
We are the Dad Bod Rap Pod. My name is Damone Carter. I am joined by Nasty Nate LeBlanc Dirty Dave Ma.
What up?
We are obviously, you know, huge Wu-Tang fans, as are great many people our age. And of Mike's and Men has definitely, it just really...
It's got you thinking about stuff, right? And about how exciting it was and how different it was when they came out.
Yeah. I mean, every time there's a little portion with old studio footage. How incredible is that?
And they had a lot of footage, which I think is great, which really makes this. They were just come along in the area of in the era of video.
Yeah, yeah.
You just know one of their friends had like a giant
rig
on his shoulder.
Giant,
that was
enormous.
They're like in vans and stuff. It's like this guy's just swinging around this like giant VHS tape taken like camcorder.
Yeah.
What did they call him back then? It was a camcorder.
It was a camcorder.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was smart to.
To document
all that stuff. Totally. But RZA's like in his like shitty ass basement apartment going like, no, here's what we do. Mm-hmm. We'll get each of you a record deal and all these different labels.
Unbelievable, though.
Wow. Okay, I'm glad I said that, because I want to bring this up to you guys. I was going to put this on Twitter, but it's better to save it for the pod.
That's right.
I just watched episode 2, and in it they talk about the amazing world-changing deal that RZA got for the group, and then on Loud, right?
Right.
And then Steve Rifkin from Loud got first right of refusal for each member, and then they eventually were able to go on and like sign their own deals. So does that mean he passed on all of the members individually?
Well, I think it's almost like the NBA thing where you're restricted free agent. I think that each member was able to get more bread by jumping ship. I think that's what it meant. I'm not a label expert, but
obviously that's how it broke down, but that's not what I understand to be first right of refusal.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Okay. I don't know. Yeah. Am I being weird?
Isn't first right of refusal he gets to pass on it?
Yeah, so
But if you know, if you are the visionary label person who sees how successful it's all going to be, sign one of them.
Right.
Sign Method Man.
Right. Can it be that it was also simple? No, I think Jeff Def Jam, for instance, when we talk about meth, I think they just came with an amount of money that didn't make sense for Loud at that time, right?
They're
just
like, you're right. I know that's what happened.
It's a dummy deal.
I didn't know he had first right of refusal. I'm like, grab Inspect a Deck and don't let go, man.
Right.
Like, sign somebody.
Totally. Steve Rifkin must have been sniffing.
You have the group, and that's the biggest thing, and it like changed the world, and it's amazing, but... Yeah. If you could have signed Ghostface?
I know.
And you didn't? How could you sleep at night?
But isn't it because he, you know, was a mountain climber who plays
the electric guitar?
I mean, real talk, right?
Not quite.
But you know,
not quite. But they were certainly talking about someone.
but their whole approach, and we have to kind of remember when they broke through in the industry, it was a very smoothed out time. So we're coming out of what I think is one of the ultimate before after records, which is the Chronic. Which was this very much high-tech, smoothed out, you know, kind of image. I think it was properly referred to maybe by Nelson George as like the Beach Boys of hip-hop.
I could see that.
And then Wu-Tang comes with this kind of totally different perspective, totally different deal. Their image, everything about them was just new and different. And I think what this documentary does is it just captures like that shit was real.
Yes.
Like that was not a put on for them. They were really those guys. And so like you mentioned, they were sitting there on camera kind of talking about how the shit was going to unfold. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly what happened. So yeah, though you get the feels throughout the whole bit. I think the Silver Rings part, which have neither of you gotten there yet.
Not seen it yet.
Okay, so you'll get to that chapter, but it's very much like this unraveling. You kind of see they had a creative like zone, right? So like when do you think the Woo kind of energy officially started to peter out? Because we had that first wave of solo albums, right?
Back end of disc two of Forever?
On the Papa Woo skit? Is that where we lost? Was it when the Papa Woo skit on tape, I knew something was wrong. I'm like, this shit is like 6 minutes, 45 seconds on a tape.
Right.
So you had to kind of sit through that shit. And I was like, something is amiss. They're doing something weird here that I forever, and I'll fight Kutso about this. I do feel like Wu-Tang Forever is a good album. It's bloated. It's horrifically bloated. But there's the good parts are so good.
The good parts are great.
Yeah. The MGM.
Everybody has their own little playlist version where they put the songs they like, right?
If it was one disc, it would be an amazing follow-up.
Yeah. Amazing classic. And so we have... So you're saying kind of, you know, disc two of Wu-Tang Forever is when the great unraveling starts to happen?
I was kind of joking, but I'll go ahead and make that claim. Yes, because the solo albums are different. Like, they're not group projects. They're RZA and that person locking in. And, like, they're part of the grand vision, but they're not.
But even those started to. Kind of. I think on the first wave, you can still smell 36 Chambers. On the first go, right?
For sure.
By the time we get to like Immobility,
right,
and some of these other ones, it's kind of like, what's going on?
With Supreme Clientele, I feel like it centers again, though.
Yeah, yeah. Right. He really brought it back.
Ghostface going off.
But it's just so good, though. Ghostface. It's hard. It really like makes up for a lot of like, missed time and a bunch of other people kind of like falling off, frankly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
there's a lot of bad music.
Right. Yes.
Like, it's not that it's. I don't know where the percentage is, but if you looked at every single song, like by every single person, one that's like thousands of songs.
Well, also the unraveling to me was when there's like a million Killer Bees, you know,
When it was oversaturation.
RZA's 10th cousin.
It was oversaturation at a point. I agree.
Some of our peers are much more well-versed in that universe. I kind of stopped listening. Like, I'm here for like the main stuff. I never really went super deep. Into Shaheem's B-sides, you know.
Killer Priest?
Not really for me. Okay. Not a person I can listen to a full record of.
Totally.
Okay.
Heavy Mental is the main one, right? Mm-hmm. I've definitely listened to that, but I don't know any. I couldn't quote you a lyric right now.
Yeah, no, I definitely.
It's so somber.
Yeah, it's definitely very, very, very East Coast. So that was kind of like the butt of a lot of our jokes was like Killer Army. Like, you know, it's Timbo rap to the extreme.
Right.
And I just believe at that time, you know, my head was somewhere else. Yeah. But
I can't keep up. It's just too much stuff.
Totally. Yeah. And there's a lot of other rap emerging at that time.
Totally.
That enveloped us.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting that this documentary, and you guys will finish it soon, not a lot of time spent on the individual projects. So we don't hear about Grave Diggers. We don't hear about Red and Meth.
Right. And if somebody wants to make a one-part Gravediggers documentary, I would love that. So I've been thinking about Gravediggers a lot lately. Well, I just love that record. It's so great.
100%.
It might be one of my favorite records ever made. And it is also a response to people who were on bad deals and finally got to do whatever they want, much like how we learn in the documentary. And if you've been paying attention forever, you knew already. GZA and RZA had these bad deals.
Right,
I've been wanting to say this to you guys too. Like, why did executives at Tommy Boy and Cold Chillin' think that these funny looking dudes should be like Mac Daddy rappers?
Totally.
It's a very odd choice. It just doesn't make sense.
That's what I'm saying. It's like you don't look at like goofy RZA when he was 19, and it's like, let's make this guy a Mac Daddy.
But, totally. Right? But, it's like, did you run that by the women in the
office? Totally.
But you know, I again, like it's kind of the time, right? So they were definitely stamped out of the Big Daddy Kane, right. Kwame mold.
I was going to say Kwame, especially the music. It's very Kwame.
It's Polka Dotty for sure.
Yes. Right.
And RZA's vision, it's interesting to see that transition. I think had he not been the prince, I don't think we get Wu-Tang. I think that experience made him be like, never do what they tell you to do.
Totally. Yeah, he basically says that. Right. And so because of the way we experienced it as consumers, it's often not known, but he was working on Gravediggers concurrent to Wu.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like if Gravediggers had been huge, right. like if it had done what like horrorcore went on to do, who knows what happens?
Right.
Like, see, that could have been the group, dude.
Right. I know why.
Are we talking about Fru Kwan's third solo album right now?
Totally.
Not yet.
Shouts to Prince Paul, though. It was great to see him on the documentary.
Totally.
Prince Paul, Sophia awesome. Chang. Like, yeah. A lot of these behind the scenes.
Dante Ross.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
Dante in particular.
Amazing footage. All the kind of folks that the personalities you kind of get to see, which you've experienced on record, but you've never really been able to really get in depth with. Meth for President. Like, this dude is,
He comes off great.
Super stand-up guy.
Like Clintonian levels of charm.
Yeah.
It's just totally. Like, if you're around him, you're like, that was the coolest guy I've ever met. Like,
I found it was interesting that how when he went to Staten Island, that was sort of like a setback, that he came from suburbia.
Yeah. So yeah, yeah. Yeah. But in some ways, it kind of...
Eye-opening.
It makes me look at his stuff, right? So... I believe Method Man, he starts off with like a fucking Rolling Stones lyric. He always had this overlay of whether it was comic books or these weird pop culture references that kind of didn't make sense for a
quote unquote. Oh, hey, you get off my cloud?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, totally. Right. Nobody else in the clan is doing same shit.
Well, I mean, that song's
like,
goofy, though. It's like, patty cake. You know what I mean? It's,
But also really grimy and hardcore.
Totally.
I mean, it's amazing. It's a great documentary, obviously. Everybody needs to go watch it. And what I hope is that, not to be this old guy, but I hope it kind of gives maybe some of the youngins, like, this is what it was all about. Because, I mean, I come to documentaries like that. Like, I don't, you know.
Right,
I don't know.
Right, totally.
I don't know about, you know, some old 70s rock shit, but sometimes when I watch it, I'm like, oh, okay.
No, totally, totally.
Okay, yeah.
So, we watched a documentary about Of Montreal. Have you guys heard of that? Mm-hmm. It's like very, like, fantastical indie rock, like...
Okay.
Crazy art, crazy shows, crazy songs.
It's about
like,
the scene.
They're a band.
It's basically
it's actually one guy, which like almost every good band is just one guy.
Right,
it's crazy.
Right.
It's like he's the genius and he needs the people to like
exactly.
play the parts. I'll pretty much watch any like music documentary.
Yeah, same.
Like there's a time in between like lunch or whatever you go out and do on the weekend and before the sun goes down, that's like the perfect documentary watching time. It's like, I want to be kind of productive right now. I kind of want to learn something, but I'm definitely
not heavy
for the day.
Yeah.
It's like, that's when I'm like scanning Canopy for music documentaries. Anyway, I'm not going to like become an Of Montreal fan, but like I now get their deal.
Right.
Gotcha.
And it's like, I didn't totally connect with the music. I actually think the guy's like a whack job, but like, now I know what their deal is, and I could have a conversation about it. I besides just flipping through it in the record racks, it's like it gives me a passing familiarity with
it.
Which is, that's all a nerd wants, right?
Totally. Yeah,
I don't need to know everything about
exactly.
everything, but I want to have like a little bit, a 1-inch depth
on a whole band. I think this documentary serves that. I mean, it's the definitive documentary on Wu-Tang.
Definitely.
Yeah, and then because there's a bunch of bad ones. Which
I've seen those all as well.
Yeah. So... definitely something you should check out. And that's kind of our rear facing nostalgia porn. But we on the Dad Bod Rap Pod definitely live in the now. In 2019, I don't know. I kind of feel like 2019 as a year for rap is some of the momentum from 2018 is still there. There's been, I feel anyway, I'm speaking for myself, I feel like there's been a number of releases. We're kind of at the mid-year point, so we're going to do some semester grades or midterm grades here for our favorite records and kind of, but just let's start with like rap in general. 2018 was like,
it's a big year.
Yeah, it was a big year.
It was an embarrassment of riches, man. I was just like, Well, first off, fucking Rock Marcy has like 10 amazing projects.
I know.
Right.
Just for the, like, the way we had to do our year-end best of, we had to, like, create a new category for people who had 4+ great projects, and there were multiple people in there.
Right.
That's insane.
Right,
and I don't think that totally translated. It's like, no, we're saying these Milo records are, like, the best records of the year, but it, is one the best record of the year?
Mm-hmm. Right.
What did we ended up doing Daytona, right? For our 2018 best of the year.
Y'all did, but yeah.
I didn't vote for that in our poll, but putting out one 12-minute record seems to be the way to break through the noise, right?
Right.
I kind of wanted to do a snarky tweet. It came out on the 25th. We're recording this
May.
On, like, 29th. And I was like, oh, the single for If You Know, You Know and the 5 B-sides came out 1 year ago today.
I like some other cuts.
No, people really go hard for that record, but it was an example of so many different, you know, from every kind of strata of rap. There were so many releases in 2018 to where I was a little bit afraid in like January of this year, like, well, shit, like how could you possibly build on this? Like, am I going to have to listen to a bunch of shitty records just to have a year-end list?
Well, last year's also the sort of reemergence of Muggs, and that's carrying over to this year.
Absolutely.
Totally.
It's unbelievable.
Absolutely. Muggs is the workhorse of the industry.
Did you guys look at the pictures, or did we? I don't remember if we talked about this, but Cypress Hill got a star on the Walk of Fame.
I did see that.
And, like, everyone was there.
Yeah.
Like, Makami was there because he's working with Muggs now. He's, like,
was
in his, like,
a bandana?
Yeah, he's, like, wearing, like, 10 bandanas. And, like, the guys dressed up.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They
and,
put
like,
on suits.
I'm, like, Muggs is, like, the best rapper or the best producer in hip-hop right now. And, like, Alchemist is there. It's, like, they're
That's
just standing
dope.
Next to each other because they're friends. Like, how much heat is
totally
like?
Did
right
they all
there,
go
dude?
To a diner after too? Did they just like hit up the Waffle House all together?
You
and
gotta
it's just
think.
Like,
I think LA is so house based, right? So it's like whose house do you go back and blaze at, basically, right?
Gosh.
It was so cool though. It was just that's our era's stuff, and like I don't believe in stars of the Walk of Fame or Halls of Fame really. Like my dad, I love you, but he always asks me if I watched the Hall of Fame induction ceremony that's on HBO, and I always say no.
Mm-hmm.
And then actually I will watch little parts of it. Like,
oh, for the Rock and Roll?
Yeah. Hall do you guys ever watch those?
I do. Mm-hmm. I do.
I'm like, I don't care about shit like that, but then I kind of do.
Yeah. I mean, if it's an artist you like, you know, Public Enemy is getting, you know.
Right.
Oh, okay.
It's like the Zombies got inducted this year. I'm a big Zombies fan.
I
saw
Chris
them.
White because of that.
Yes. Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, for what?
It's going to be for Wax.
Oh, cool. His voice is gone, dude. Not Chris White. Colin Blunstone, the singer, is it like it was bad. Like
really?
I clicked on it on HBO and I was like, oof. Because I saw them when they got back together at a club date in San Francisco and it was incredible. Yeah. Like he still had it and like their songs are so tightly written. And
no
I'm
Rose
just, like,
for Emily, huh?
Yeah. He wasn't there.
It wasn't the time of the season.
Exactly. Yeah. So it was kind of like
I'm
sad.
Sitting through the zombies jokes like the rest of y'all, just clinging for understanding.
Damone's just like, brains. Is that what we're talking about? Yeah. Oh, okay. Wrong zombies.
Hall of Fames are interesting. If we had a proper rap when Muggs is first ballot, and to see him,
you'd think, but it would all be like Biggie, Tupac, and not that they're not great,
right?
Enough, Macklemore, he would be like sixth ballot. You know
really?
What I mean? Like,
unfortunately,
that's real head shit.
Well,
like,
if it started now,
Well, no. Muggs. If Cypress Hill has a star on the Walk of Fame and Jump Around is a jock jam of all time. I think Muggs has a commercial career. This is the genius of him, and hopefully we'll get to do a whole show on him.
Right.
When you look at the length of what he's done, how many producers? He started with 7A3 in fucking 87.
I know.
Yeah.
First record
that's
in 87. Is making records right now that are super urgent, working with the dopest spitters in the game, and also has, you know, he made Check Yourself. For Ice Cube, you know what I mean? Like, he has pop
we
hits.
Know that, but the kind of people who induct people into Hall of Fames do not. That's
really?
That's my
postulation. Then they need to be dragged out and shot.
It's like Ludacris would get in before DJ Muggs.
Which is Ludacris.
If there was a hip-hop Hall of Fame.
Because it would be about, well, it's
no,
weird. But yeah, no,
record
I get you.
Sales,
get you.
It's notoriety.
Right,
what they
right.
are popularity contests.
Right.
Okay.
And it's like, I don't know. I think
he
we,
is a first
we live in
ballot
the bubble of...
Dad Bod Rap Pod Hall of Fame.
Totally.
DJ Muggs, we're putting it up right now. Hall of Game, if you will.
So let's get into our mid-year check-in, and I'll start with he put out a great record with this rapper named Ido this year called Hell's Roof. Grimy East Coast drug dealer
super
rap.
East Coast.
That's
right,
so good.
Right. Yeah. Right. And that on top of his Makami stuff. Also really looking forward to his Crime Apple.
Okay, but let's you know, in all fairness, I was surprised to hear that the group was not super into the Muggs Makami record.
It's not my favorite record.
Yeah,
it's a good record.
Mm-hmm.
It's neither of their best work.
Right.
I thought it was a little less than the sum of its parts.
Agreed. I think I needed to manage expectations a little bit more too, because I was like, holy shit, this is going to be the shit.
Totally. Know? And I really liked Mock's contributions to the Soul Assassins thing from last year, where he did that really interesting format where he had two songs by each guy. It's like two Doom songs, two Hami songs, I can't remember who any of the other people are right now, but because
I'm starting to think Mock, I mean, I might kind of be better in small doses. Like, who is that dude on that cut rather than
as a feature guy?
Okay.
I saw a great tweet that was like our Earl sweatshirt and Makami backpack mumble rap. Which I thought was very interesting. The what is it called? 900 K, what is the record called? No, it's a French word. I'm sorry.
Right, it's like tout la vie.
Tout la vie.
Yeah, to quit. Yeah. For me,
I don't speak Haitian Creole. I'm sorry, you guys.
For me, that was like because I'm really just stream dependent right now. That's one of the only projects of his that is proper.
You don't have to get on YouTube.
I'm not gonna say it's the first time I heard him, but it's the first time that I'm kind of like, okay, I'm ingesting this album. I'm kind of wrapping my head around it. I really think there's a strong correlation. I'm not saying either person, but either person between him and Crime Apple. They have a very similar Makami and Crime Apple. They have a very similar approach and this kind of peppering of another language into it. Where
sure with that part, yes.
Well, but even in an approach, I'm just is the thing.
I'd like to hear a little bit more about that, because I think Crime Apple is a straight rhymer, whereas Mock sort of uses negative space. You know what I mean?
Atmosphere builder.
He kind of jumps in and jumps out.
He does
mythology creator.
He does different runs, but this idea of a backpack drug dealing universe that they create and kind of pepper with everything seems like they're sitting next to a dope fiend. Like maybe not necessarily in structure, but in kind of it's an energy and a darkness that they create that is very similar. One is kind of like Haitian Creole.
Okay.
One is kind of Colombian, interspersed. They both have worked with Muggs, and I'm eager to hear the Crying Apple in Muggs record, which they recorded in Colombia.
I know, that's so tight.
Oh, man.
There was a big Muggs interview that I can't remember what it was on, but we talked about it extensively in our chat thread. Muggs is doing records with everybody.
Yeah,
it's like he knows who all the good underground dudes are.
Right.
And he's like he'll do one with Fahim.
Yeah,
and it's hard to think about Mock's career without Fahim. Like,
it's
very much their thought. I think of them as kind of a package deal, and and you need the little like levity of like Fahim's like different vocal range and like kind of like different approach to things. It's nice to have some balance with
a
straight Mock record.
Agreed,
kind of a lot.
Yeah, I don't know if he can carry an entire record by himself. I guess time will tell. But I sort of just like his random cuts off
YouTube. Really,
yeah.
Just his different little blurb. So I gotta hit YouTube.
It's so
I fucking hate listening to music on YouTube.
I know, but sometimes you got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
I think it's so interesting that he also Mock did like the Nipsey Hussle model, like the $100 CD, DIY model, which is like I think that's so great. Like I love that idea. I haven't liked anything enough to pay $100
for. I'm about to say
it.
I love
you
never fallen
idea.
For it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
As a concept.
That's also like creating lore, which is genius. I mean,
yeah. So I'm definitely aware of the Makami lore, and maybe I was kind of like, okay, this rapper doesn't necessarily live up to it, doesn't necessarily take away from it.
I agree.
The thing I loved about that record the most, and I want to figure out, is where does he get the fucking samples? He has these wild. I don't know if it's from a movie or documentary or something, and I don't know if this maybe Muggs is doing, but I found it to be an interesting kind of vibe.
Another record that we all kind of liked was the Tree record.
We grown now. Aren't we?
And he did an interesting release model. He actually kind of fucked up the release. Where it was on streaming, it was off streaming, it was kind of hard to find, which and you had to go to his website to listen to it, which I did. I was like, I want to hear this. He was coming off the collaboration record with Vic Spencer.
Yeah.
And I was like, I really like this. Like, I'm liking this switch up. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of a singer.
Yeah,
and that's not Crooner. For everyone. Soul Trap is what he calls it. He has like his whole brand around it. He does merch on it. Like, I like it, and I like him. And I had heard of him before. We did this in our worst rap names thing that I like. Hope people don't go that far back and
dig
listen
up.
To. It was kind of a little. We were underprepared and not our best work.
There's
but
some stuff I'd like
there
admitted.
Was like yeah, the, like there was Tree. There was a dude called Shirt at that time,
and
we were kind of like, what's with these names? Like it was almost like Seinfeldian
bad
stand up comedy. Mm-hmm. It's like what Tree? What a, was Branch taken? It's stupid. And like you know, not our anyway. So.
But
I think that record is very good. And
oh my
he's
goodness.
Such a soulful person.
Right.
It's like you just want to like hear more.
Well, and it's this interesting take that's kind of in the vein of old Dirty Bastard in the terms of his phrasing. And it's soul, but it's not like, I don't know, it's not like D'Angelo or something. It's like a really old, gruff, almost reminds you of an old Baptist church minister kind of inflections that he does.
Totally. Well said.
And so definitely steeped in Chicago-ness. Mm. Which, you know, Chicago continues to kill shit as they did in 2018. But I really like this record. We Grown Now. I think he would have a really bright future if he was like on the I don't know, Striver track and
he's
rap.
Over
it doesn't
it,
seem
though.
Like it doesn't seem like he is.
Yeah.
But this record I really highly recommend it. It's one of those where when I'm with people and I want to be like, here's a great record you haven't heard.
Yeah. Yes.
I do suggest
it's
Tree.
Like you've heard it all?
Yeah.
Have you heard Tree?
Because it's a new sound.
We would be remiss if we did not bring up the other album of the year, which is obviously it's really nice to see them get some mainstream shout outs from Time Magazine, and that is...
Oh my gosh.
Billy Woods and Kenny Siegel, Hiding Ooh. Places. I feel like we're almost talking about it too much.
Right,
but
right.
I love this record. I will be very surprised if... This is if something better
comes
or,
out this
like,
year,
or that speaks to me more comes
right.
out this year.
Right.
Like
right.
I think this record's phenomenal. Yeah. I love the cover art.
So
I
much
love
to
their collaboration. I love the fact we've talked to them both about it.
Mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
love the song structure. I love the way that he weaves the production elements around the lyrics.
100%.
Like the weird guitar sounds. Yeah. Like the content. Yeah. Like.
There's so much to like about it, and it feels like it's like for you.
Like, I'm just like
most people. I'm like, you're not gonna like it. I feel
right,
totally.
Right.
But Time Magazine knows this exists.
Totally.
No, well, here's
That's
the thing.
Fascinating
and here's
to
here's
me.
The thing about Woods and kind of Arm & Hammer to a greater extent. There are certain groups that capture the imagination of the music critic.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
scene,
right?
Right. And Arm & Hammer was that record, their record last year, Paraffin, was definitely that record. If you wanted to seem like you were cool and you knew what the fuck you were talking about, you said Paraffin, right?
Yeah, there's definitely something to that.
And so I
yes,
feel...
Yes, but it's also really fucking good. It's not
about
cool. It's about promoting the good shit.
But I'm telling you how it got to Time. I'm telling you how it got into Time.
Right.
I'm
right.
listening.
It is a really good record. Yeah. And that was kind of my intro to Arm & Hammer. But it is it's a classic critical acclaim record.
Yeah.
Where it's heavy, it's deep. If you understand it, you are saying I know something about music.
Yeah.
Right. It's not accessible. It's not easily accessible.
Right. They've become sort of these underground critical darlings. You know, it's like the writer from 1999 who really backs Aesop Rock before everyone else.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah. Exactly. It has that appeal, and I feel like I just feel like there's certain artists who capture the imagination because not only is it great music. It kind of has a story and depth and mystery to it. I think when you listen to Hiding Places, it's not everything's not served up for
right,
you.
Right.
But there's enough, there's an intrigue that runs through that right, record right. where I'm like.
And Billy Woods is really good about that, you know, with digitizing his face and just sort of, you know, having this low key
the mystery.
Persona.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
I never thought I would say this because I thought it was a joke at the time, but like, I haven't done it yet, but I'm really going to go back and like seriously listen to Supercron Flight Brothers, which was his first group on Def Jux.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
That's
crazy.
I've
okay.
gone back and listened to a lot of the Woods solo stuff, Elucid mm-hmm. solo stuff, like
right.
their other Armand Hammer records that I liked. I just wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
And right. now I consider myself to be this huge fan of theirs, and I'm going to go back that further step
right.
and listen to some Supercron Flight Brothers. Like, I was like, that's a weird name.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
was a turnoff for me. And
yeah.
they had kind of cartoony imagery, and I'm like, how is this going to work with what I know Woods became?
Right.
right.
But
right.
I'm going to give it a try. I will report back.
It's interesting that the first record was on Def Jux because I hear a lot of their stuff and I go,
it makes sense.
Though. This was breathed out of that universe,
oh, right?
right? 100%. That sound, that
isn't
LP.
Isn't that universe New York?
But it's a certain type of New York, right?
Right,
yeah. right.
It's
right.
not boot camp click New York.
Right. It's not boot yeah. camp, but, right. but it's influenced by Wu-Tang, but also something...
Yeah,
more literary, more sci-fi.
Yes,
just
yeah.
this
it's
wild
underground
universe.
Underground hip hop.
It's very underground, but there's levels, right? Because
yeah.
some people will go, well, Boot Camp Clip was
right,
was underground
right,
hip hop
right.
at a time.
Yeah,
So it's kind of a different. It's definitely more learned.
Yeah.
It
definitely has a sci-fi feel to it.
Yeah,
icy.
Yeah,
you know.
So I definitely I seek Hiding Places is that record for people who think that hip hop doesn't happen anymore. You know what I mean? Like, oh, what happened to the
totally.
You know, the great dense lyric record?
Right.
It is here.
Right.
It, and I think Siegel's his audio kind of soundscape fits perfectly. If I had to say who was the best kind of duo thing that's happened thus far, it's definitely Hiding Places.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Another super dope record that came out and I think is one of the best records of this half year is Quelle Chris.
I think they
Guns.
Came out the same day.
Did they?
Wow. I'm pretty sure they
this
came out
the same
day.
This is a heavy ass year.
It's
it was the same weekend as We Grown Now. I remember because I was bumping these and,
right.
and one
oh,
kind of continuous.
The only thing, the only reason I might be off on that is because thanks to Dave's magical emailing skills, we had the promo for Hiding Places.
Oh no, we have guns. Did we have guns too?
I think so.
We had
the pre on
so.
Guns
they
too.
They might not have came out at the same time, but I received
them
at the
same
time.
Yeah. yeah, we were rubbing them on our bodies at the same time.
Guns.
Yeah, guns and Hiding Places. Quelle Chris, who's been around for a while, who's dope. Nate has definitely been a champion
yes.
of his work. This is his. I guess I have to say his first solo project that really it all came to. I knew he was dope.
Yeah,
I knew
yeah.
he had.
It's
stuff.
Very timely.
It's good to see him getting attention, though, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's definitely it got some traction, but it's just such a it's a dense record. It's fun. It's serious.
Yeah,
it's timely, as you mentioned.
Some shit.
I think we all have very different like gym qualifications. But it's a gym record for me because it's so dense. That's like where I'm just staring into space on the elliptical and I can like
really
listen to what he's saying. It's not so up-tempo that it's like pushing me to sweat more or whatever people are looking for at the gym. But for me, it's like unstructured listening time.
Okay.
So I've been like really digging deep into it. It's like there are many levels to what he's saying. It's like it's a brilliant project.
Yeah, I this is a laundry record for me.
Interesting.
So I'm just kind of sitting there and you can listen to even the skits, which I know you're an anti-vaxxer on skits, but there's this one skit. And I think it's based on Goodfellas potentially.
Yeah.
But it's just so well executed, bleeds into the next song.
It's almost like Prince Paul's Italian guy voice.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He
does
but
over
it's so it's
project.
Yeah, it's totally. So spot on in kind of how it blends into the other stuff. So I highly recommend this record. It's high concept, but it works.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't often find that usually when people try to set out for a concept album.
Totally.
Grandiose
and
stupid.
And I'll just say this. I was not thinking I wouldn't say this on air, but like he had a great. Or like a really ambitious concept record last year
right.
with his wife, Jean Grey.
That we didn't love.
None of us connected with.
Right. Yeah.
And
I haven't
I'm
gone
like,
back to it.
I love this Quelle record. I'm like, am I sexist?
No.
It's like.
A little bit.
Yeah.
these songs are better, dude.
Yeah.
I think
it's just
a
better record.
I like listening to these songs
I
more.
Said this multiple times when we discussed Everything is Fine last year. I felt like It was like a museum piece, and there was a piece of glass in between me and the art. It has been removed, and we're just getting the raw, uncut Quelle Chris, stream of consciousness. Well,
songs like Straight Shot, which hits on an emotional level. I'm like, am I getting misty in here? Like, this is it, which, you know, you on Everything Is Fine, you didn't get it. That concept was there. I got what they were kind of trying to say.
It was more quirky, I think.
Yes. Yeah. And the videos were great, and like, I really wanted to like it. But we didn't actually like it. It was like I could it's like when you go, oh, that's funny, instead of laugh.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And with this record, you're kind of all in. It was kind of great top to bottom, and I feel like one of those that'll definitely be on the year end
For me spectrum. So far it's right up there. Dave, I think you are kind of leading the charge on the YOD record.
Yes, dude, love it. I mean, you know, my problem with Droog is like I don't really like his songs. I always think he's a fantastic writer, lots of presence,
verse writer.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, but I think this is the first album where the songs are good.
Okay.
Do you like it?
Do
you
I
like him? Do you like it?
Here's my problem.
Oh, we should
with Droog.
We're talking about
Your Old Droog.
Yes,
Old
and
yes.
The album title is "It Wasn't Even Close."
Right.
Yeah.
One of the best of the year, I think.
He has a particular brand of rap. It's rap for rappers.
It is
for sure.
It is.
And when I shouldn't do this, but I am always juxtaposing someone's their Twitter persona, which he is super active in that space.
Right.
Slandering rap genius.
Yeah.
It's like his personal brand. They pulled all his stuff off the website.
Really?
Like, did they?
Like, it worked. He doesn't want to be on there, and he's not on there.
Wow.
Interesting.
Yeah, I saw like some like Bulgarian kid or something going like, hey, man, I really like English isn't my first language, and I really want to understand your raps. Why isn't it on Rap Genius? And he just posted the emoji where the smiley face guy's wearing sunglasses. I just thought that was so funny.
He's a rapper's rapper. I get it. Maybe I got to give it another chance.
But
you're
a rapper.
I know. I know, but there's something to
is
like
it too much.
You're rapping to impress your rapper friends, and there was something about
I'm always impressed. I love it.
Yeah,
rapping.
I'm impressed. I mean, everything's a triple entendre, and it's fantastic.
Yeah,
is it too much?
I felt it was maybe too much is the right word, or just I get it, bro. Like you're high quality with the bars. Put that into a really compelling song instead of being like master of bars, and I'm like. I get that, and it's my same, you know, love-hate that I have with Homeboy Sandman, where I go, sometimes when he uses his superpowers and can craft it into a dope song, it's fucking incredible. And sometimes I'm like, this is a rhyme exercise right now.
Yeah.
Like, this is calisthenics right now.
Yeah.
Love rhyme exercises. I'm so in on rhyme exercises. I hate to cut this short, but we got to call Vic.
Vic Spencer?
Yeah.
Vic Damone?
The Vic Spencer, who has two very good records out. One is called Things Change, I Don't. Mm-hmm. He just put that out direct to fans, which is what we're going to talk to him about.
Yep.
And then the other one is with Tree, and it's called Nothing in Something. So
that's right.
He's having a killer run. We're going to talk to him real quick. We'll be right back. Let's talk about your new record, Things Change, I Don't. Can you talk about like how the experience has been? This is your second time releasing straight to fans?
Absolutely, yeah. This is my second time. I told myself that after the first release that I was going to practice doing this once a year. Of course, I'm going to have other albums for the streaming and all those good things. But I just wanted to have something that would break the mold of how we get music nowadays that we want. Like, you know, we only get music that we want through streaming or generation thing, you know what I'm saying, and technology changing. But nobody ever remembers or reflect back when, you know, when an album dropped and you had to go home and download it and sync it to with the artwork and sync it to your music library and
right
a CD to actually listen to it. So I wanted to bring that integrity back in the game, because people that actually trying to purchase it, that mean that they actually sat down and listened to it, as opposed to just, oh, I get to it because it's on streaming sites. And, you know, with streaming sites, like, they're releasing like every, like thousands of albums every week.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's hard to catch up, and it's hard to remember, and it's hard to reflect on those albums. If you personally took time to DM me, get the album, download it, listen to it, get the artwork, sync it, then that holds a lot more weight than how the streaming is set up.
Right. It's like it's inconvenience. It like becomes the new like art form. It's like you have to apply effort. That's fascinating. Is it leading you to like
that back in.
Be more in touch with your fans? Like, are you like, do you, will you like just talk to cats?
Yeah, all day. Just, you know, showing them how much I appreciate them doing it, because when it's times, we've all gotten lazy with the screen game. So I appreciate that time, you know, and I got plenty of different stories about, you know, different things that people will stop and do what they're doing to get the album. One guy told me he was about the drill surgeon. He's like, man, I'm about to once I heal. You know what I'm saying? And I appreciate that. You know what I'm saying? Because he could have been sitting down on meds, you know what I'm saying, getting well. But instead, he wanted to support me, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's crazy. And I would assume that, you know, if you're going direct, that there's no middleman on the financial end either, right?
Absolutely, yeah, no middleman. You know what I'm saying? Nothing wrong with the middleman, but it's more so. People, I feel like in this time, like even like with the biggest artists out right now, and you got into like a real close thing, like that's my number one fan. He'll get ignored by his artist. You know what I'm saying? Or he'll see him at a show, get an autograph, and there'll be a moment. That's it. It's ever mastered the art of actually having a dialogue with the fan. Like, you know, there's a fan, there's a guy that might be a fan of Tyler the Creator, Tyler the Creator ignores him, but I got time for him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a different thing when you can be able to tap into what's missing. You know, in that aspect, not being able to talk to your favorite artist. I'll be pissed, man. I'll be my favorite artist and they ignore me. Like, dang, you know what I'm saying? You know, a lot of artists got a lot on their plate. Like, a Tyler the Creator got a lot on his plate. So, he's not trying to, you know, chop it up with his number one fan. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, he don't have a time, but I do.
Right.
And I'm going to bring that, integrity back into the game.
So we're kind of taking this episode to do like a mid-year check-in on what albums we've been feeling so far. And one of the albums that came up was your collaborative album with Tree. Can you talk a little bit about that album and kind of how that came together and like who he is to you?
Tree is like my brother, man. For real. Like we've been making music for over 10 years now. And in the beginning, when he reached out to me, he was staying in Atlanta, and he was like, man, I want to work with you, and let's get to work. And we actually worked on the first song, and Chance the Rapper was actually in the studio with me during that time working on my project, Big Green Things. And I was like, well, I'm done with this project. I got to do the feature for Tree. I did the feature, and then Chance heard the hook, and he was like, oh, man, yo, I need in on this. He literally begged me to get on this hook. And I sent it back to Tree, and Tree loved it. Since then, we have had the brothership relationship outside of music, you know what I'm saying? Our relationship grew. And once he got back, I always just, you know, he took a hiatus and, you know, fell away from the rap game, fell out of love. And I was always in his corner during that time, like, hey, man, you need to get back in the lab. So he always had the lab next to him, always was working on stuff here and there. He would always do a lot of stuff for expensive, but he would never, you know, drop albums or drop no music. He only did work for Chris Spencer during this time. So to get him back out on, and he's like, man, I'm ready, man. I'm ready to, you know, give it my all, and to see him come back full fledged. I just wanted my hand in that creative juice. So we sat down and recorded nothing from me in about like 4 days.
That's cool, man.
About a total of maybe 7 hours in those 4 days.
Wow.
And we recorded that album, yeah.
His album, so We Grown Now, is incredible as well. That's probably my favorite project of his that I've heard so far. So it's I'm sure, like, you know, you seeing it behind the scenes, you see like how hard it was for him to come back, but I think he's making really vital music.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that Tree never lost what he had. I think that like outskirt things allowed him to take this hiatus. And I don't think he was never discouraged as far as making great music. He always had that in him. I always told him that, like, man, yo, you got the power to touch souls, man. You got the implement on that more, you know what I'm saying? Bring the soul trap genre back to life. Mm. We need that out here, you know what I'm saying? And as far as the Chicago genre, that on the table.
Just because I have you on the phone, just like seeing you on social media and stuff, I know you have insane shoe game. What kind of kicks are you into right now? And like, what should a dude be wearing for summer?
Man, right now I got an off-white blaze, black boots right now.
Nice.
I've been on my Air Force One wave this storm this year. I've been, you know,
did you get the ones with the camouflage swoosh?
I did not get those, but I did get the denim Air Force ones.
Nice.
I got those at Fox Business, and I actually custom my Nike ID to a couple pair for me and two of the Green Room members. Been on Air Force One wave, man. I've been copping out the speakers, of course, the off white Air Force Ones, the Volts, and the black ones. But you know what I'm saying? Air Force One's period has been the go-to sneaker this spring and summer. I found myself copping. I copped a lot of shoes in this year. But Air Force One has been the most silhouette out of all.
Right on, right on. Cool, man. We don't want to take too much of your time. We just wanted to make sure that we, like, shine a light on the new project. And I just have to say, as a fan, like, really digging the direct-to-fan model. I think it's super cool. I'm glad to hear it's working out for you as well. And, well, you know, we're fans. We'll support.
No, thank you guys, man. I appreciate that, man. People like you guys reaching out to get this album. It's not about the money. It's more about connecting with you guys on a level that the top-tier rappers are not giving the fans. I believe that the fans have a sense of they want control in the wrong areas of the artist. Like, when you get on stage, they want you to perform their favorite song. They want you to, you know, just do these outlandish things. But if they had power in listening to music, giving their critiques, giving their criticism, giving their input, giving their opinion, that gives them power in the right direction. You know what I'm saying? So it's like now you're giving them something where their actual opinion will actually work.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because fans would be like, man, you got to perform such and such, knowing doggone well I'm not going to perform that song ever. You know what I'm saying? So you got to, so you know what I'm saying? You got to take that sense of control from that and put it somewhere where it'll be useful. On both ends.
That's fascinating. I will be thinking about that for weeks. I think, as we are mainly fans, we do, you know, journalism, and Damone's a performer, but we need to make sure that you're being a good fan and you're not like being demanding like that. Like, you need to check yourself kind of as a fan and like make sure you're not being the wrong kind. So cool, man. Super appreciate it. Thank you for talking to us.
Thank you guys, man. You guys, some love always, man. I appreciate that.
Right on. Thanks, Vic. Have a good one.
You too, guys.
All right, peace.
So like I was saying, no shade on Droog. Droog is a dope MC. I don't even do the minus points for like, oh, he sounds like Nas. I'm like, oh, I think he establishes a voice here that is not necessarily Nas. So what I will do is this, because I gotta be real. I listened to it like 1.5 times. So I'll go back to it on the behest of my brethren here and see how I feel about it.
I think your critique is spot on. If that's how you feel about him overall, this isn't gonna change your mind. Like, a weird thing he does on this record, and I never know why people make these decisions, but the last song, which is kind of a outro, it was 90 from the Line, mm-hmm. has the best verse.
Really? I gotta re-listen to it.
I'm like, that verse is hitting for me, dude. Like, that is so well done.
Well,
and
maybe
I'm like,
he saved it for last.
I know. But then it's kind of in a weird song where buried. I can't play the song.
Got it.
Like, it has outro-ish tendencies there's other stuff that happens. Right. And I'm just like, man, you can't really playlist that song. Or if I got to DJ with this record, I don't play things for one verse and get out of it. It's kind of underground hip-hop heavy lyrical thing. It's just not what I'm like. About 3 minutes with that beat in this level of writing, but whatever, dude. I'm not here to nitpick.
But you know, sort of to your point, though, I feel like this is probably his most solid album with a sense of continuity, with an outro and song structure, and
totally.
You know,
it's really good. Yeah, I think it's very well done. But the kind of wave so far this year, I think I'll quote you. Something you said off mic, Damone, is that all the best rap records this year have been R&B records.
Yeah.
And this is more your lane than Dave's and I's, but like you're kind of feeling
my
this.
Chest hair is out right now. No, I've really been drawn to, I think, three records in particular, or even four, kind of really personify this. And they're records by rappers who are essentially doing some really interesting R&B. I think the first and foremost, and this guy is kind of carrying the zeitgeist right now, is Anderson .Paak. What was the other? Oxnard? Kind of mid.
Dude, I have to give credit where credit's due on air. You were, when we were anticipating Oxnard, you were like, is Dr. Dre gonna ruin this record? And I was like, no. And now I'm kind of like, did he?
He
had to come out with another record immediately to kind of get the bad taste out of our mouth on Oxnard.
Supposedly it's a trilogy,
isn't it? Malibu,
Venice, and Oxnard.
Santa Monica, no. but
Marina Del Rey coming next year.
What I understood it to be, and I might be wrong about this, is Oxnard was the rap record, and now this new one, which is called, I'm getting my beaches mixed up. What's the new one?
I don't think it's on the beach theme. I think that trilogy is over, and it's like something else. Am I tripping? I can look it up. Keep talking.
Dude, why can't I? I love this record. I can't remember. And like Vic
Poser.
Said,
no, just kidding.
Yeah, this is what streaming does to you.
right, yeah. Totally.
So on the new record, which is
Ventura,
which is decidedly more R&B, but the rap parts are stellar.
Right, Andre.
Andre 3000's verse, worth the price of admission.
Yeah, totally.
Best verse of the year.
Totally.
Right, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. I think it'll be hard to top this year.
The best verse of the year is on an R&B album.
Is on an R&B album. And an R&B song.
From a retired rapper.
With Smokey Robinson.
Crazy.
I think that record really came together well. He's got the joint King James, which is the most rappiest song of the whole record. But I think...
Is that about LeBron?
Yeah. He's like, I salute King James for, you know, bringing a change for equal opportunity. He's like, it's kind of like it's a woke
activism.
Yeah, it's a kind of a woke song, but he uses that line.
The I can't breathe shirts in Comic Sans.
Yeah. You never forgive him for that.
There's a lot of fonts.
So,
right.
So not that it's about that.
It was a really well put together record. I think some of Anderson .Paak's best work. I felt in this record like I wish that he somehow had a hand in Jamiroquai's last record, because some of the stuff on there has that up-tempo, dreamy, wonderful, good Jamiroquai vibe on there that I'm like, wow, you did that. But then he also has some different flavors. He brings out Brandy on the record.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's a very cool record, but decidedly R&B, but we'll call it rap adjacent.
He's a hip-hop artist, I would say.
Okay.
To me. Okay. Do you feel that way?
I feel like he's more of an R&B artist.
Interesting. Yeah.
Who does some raps?
Yeah.
Well,
I guess he's a drummer first and foremost.
He's a
drummer. Right?
He's a musician. Right. But he's a musician.
You think that would be in the soul section of the record store?
I don't know, but I mean, I think back to his Tiny Desk concert. That's not a rap performance.
Yeah, you're right.
It really isn't.
And
I feel like
a soul singer playing drums.
Yeah, right. I feel like if you go to see him live, you're gonna see more singing than you are rapping.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, but that's kind of the theme, right? Is this? It's punctuated, but the raps are really good. It's not as if he's you know. We've seen that work in the inverse where you're like, dude, why are you even trying
to
rap?
Totally.
So yeah, Ventura, definitely one of my favorite joints. A little micro project that Fonte of Little Brother fame put out, believe called Pacific Standard Time. Mm-hmm. 4-song project, which has one rap song on it. Mm. But was just really good. It came out the same weekend that Tree We Grown Now. It was like a whole.
Did every record come out that weekend?
Dude, it was heavy. I remember that weekend going.
We're still dealing with that weekend.
The reverberations from it.
It's called Pacific Time.
Pacific Time. So yeah. he dropped this little kind of micro EP, mostly him singing, which we're familiar with. He's definitely sung a great deal. But then when he does choose to rap on it, it's fucking phenomenal.
I was just like, he's not talking about gout nearly enough on this. It's not for me.
That's right.
I loved his rap album from last year. Yeah. This did not connect with me, but Dave and I are always like, there's too much singing on this.
Yeah.
And it's like, we just can't get over that.
Yeah, yeah, it's an easy thing for me to go back to, but every time I'm like, stop it.
Essential of human expressions, but yeah.
I know. And I like things that are by singers. Like, I listen to a ton of indie rap.
Totally. Indie rock,
and I'm not like, oh, I wish they'd bust a verse.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Totally. It's like, if you set me up for singing,
Fonte's a singer, though. I feel y'all on non-singers... singing too much.
Sure,
I get that. Like, I feel you 100% on non-singers. Fonte is actually like a singing-ass singer. Of course, if you do Foreign Legion or Foreign Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
If you're into that stuff at all, which is this interesting cross-section of underground rap and R&B. So that vibe is kind of regurgitated on here.
I would say that is hugely influential on modern music, right?
Absolutely.
Like, that's like a huge deal.
There's a school of thought that says Drake is very heavily influenced by
the things that
Fonte does. So I really like that. It's very short, but definitely cool. And then the newest and kind of this new canon of rap and B is Tyler, the Creator's Igor, mm-hmm. which... 2017, Flower Boy was my favorite record. So obviously, the new introspective, less homophobic Tyler is my shit.
Sure.
I wasn't a huge fan before. I could always recognize he had talent, but I was just like, there's only so many F-bombs I'm going to hear on a record. But he's really brought a new sensibility. I definitely think it's Igor's songs in the key of Kanye. I think Kanye is on the record for a hot second.
He is. That's a good way of putting it, though.
Yeah, he brings out Uncle Charlie Wilson. He's definitely got this wild eclectic flavor that feels like Pablo a little bit, but overall
amazing production.
Yeah,
amazing production. I mean, I'm not even super into the songs. I mean, I think Tyler's a genius. I love the way this album's been marketed and you know, his whole aesthetic, but
the Phil Spector
really
aesthetic. I'm like, dude, you came out as the Black Phil Spector. You're out here doing a lot right now.
Well, I think Cool Keith did the blonde wig and the sunglasses
absolutely.
As well.
Absolutely.
You know?
Cool Keith did everything.
Right.
All the weird shit.
I think it's a beautifully produced record. I will never listen to it again. It's not for me. It's like,
never?
I don't think so. Like, not the full thing. I'm not going to just throw it on.
But you know what?
A song here and there, perhaps.
Earthquake
but
is
like,
good, though. I mean, as a pop song.
Yeah, I just, I'm, like, seeing where he came from and where he has ended up is so tight. Like, he's,
totally.
I would say he's one of the most influential people of our times.
Sure.
He changed fashion. Sure. He changed music. Mm-hmm. He changed rap criticism. Mm-hmm. He changed like how people interact with the internet.
Right.
He got banned and unbanned from the UK for starting riots. Like he's a fascinating person.
Fascinating.
I'm super into him. I'm a fan of his.
Right.
But this like pretty orchestral R&B is not what I listen to.
Interesting.
It's kinda, there's some hard moments on it that I like though. But again,
I enjoyed my listen.
But you know,
I'm just telling you.
I will say this though. I wasn't super into Flower Boy, but now I like it more. And, you know, great artists are ahead of their time. So maybe I'll go back to this and dig it way more later.
Yeah,
you know?
It's an R&B record, though. Yeah. It has rap moments. It's a quirky, different kind of R&B. And his kind of musicianship, I guess, you know, people make fun of this, but like the chord progressions, it's a great kind of palette of sound colors that he paints with on this record. So I'm really high on it. I will have to have this debate throughout the year of, you know, are these really rap records though? Yeah. You know, even some of the rap songs that he does, it's almost feels like it's
secondary.
It's the rap that comes inside the R&B song.
But we're not going to say he's not a hip hop artist.
He's a hip hop artist.
No,
he's
totally
a
hip hop artist. No, he's totally hip hop. But it's kind of almost like when the Beastie Boys would do their instrumental stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is it automatically hip hop because they did it? Like, I'm like, oh, this is different.
Because this is where I come from and this is how I think about music. Yeah, you file it in the rap section of the record store. I had this long debate with one of my parents' friends once about whether Imagine was a rock and roll song.
Why is Imagine not a rock and roll song?
Right,
it's like a ballad. It's like that's not rock and
is
roll.
Is it folk?
I'm like, it is actually.
Okay,
the great artists expand the definition of what is and is not.
It's based on where the artist is rooted in, not necessarily their output.
Not every single song, right?
It's more.
I guess if you wanted to make this argument, it's a pop ballad.
Right.
But it's in the rock section of the record store.
Semantics is back on his shit.
I know.
John Lennon's a rock artist, right?
Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah. Everything he ever did is a rock, a rock thing.
Got you.
The weird like things with Yoko, like where
they're
screaming or whatever.
Totally. It's
rock. Didn't mean to take it there.
No, but that's such a great corollary though, right? When you think of Tyler the Creator, right? He does have this journey where he is in, like, you would think he was sleeping with Yoko or
I mean
whatever version of that makes sense for him. I think what's really interesting about this record is, again, you went for somebody who was like very homophobic in word and song two. He's making songs about break up with your girlfriend, like be with me. These are songs
album, he's talking about kissing white boys. But I don't think he was ever homophobic. I think he used homophobic language in an inflammatory
manner. Is as homophobic does. But it's like saying I'm not racist. I just like to use the N-word for effect.
But Frank Ocean was gay the whole time and Sid was gay the whole time.
Right.
And they hung out with them.
That's how systems of oppression work. You know what I mean? Like people give
I'm
their
never
white
going to outwoke you, and I'm sure you're going to win this argument, but I think I believe what I'm saying. You know
what
I mean?
No, and that's fine, but I think it's an important distinction to make is that when you say, you know, you use this word, which is like highly offensive to a lot of people, and go, well, so and so here doesn't mind it.
I understand, but we're talking about this in the context of hip hop lexicon, though, right? So are we going to go back and say that Q-Tip was a homophobe too, in the same way that you're
Tyler
was?
Sure. And Nate's sexist. I mean, it's all it's all things. It's not a. It's we can't look at these as like in either or. We're everybody's dipping out of this, and he was very liberal in the usage of this, and he knew it pissed people off, and he knew it hurt people's feelings,
right?
Like, so
the confrontation was the point.
Yeah,
right.
It's
but
anything
the
to get
the
attention.
inflection point to say that somebody's gender is your inflection point to say I'm tough or I'm edgy, I'm cool, and I'm gonna use a degrading you as a thing. And if Sid and Frank were cool with it, that Sid and Frank, that don't mean it's, again, I know a great many people who signed off on Krayshawn using the N-word. I don't give a fuck who you knew in your set that allowed that to happen, but across the board, that was not. So I'm glad he's matured out of it. And honestly, it's very interesting now that he's went
the whole opposite direction.
Right. Where he hints at this on Flower Boy, which I thought was a little bit cheesy. But on this, the songs are clearly gendered towards, you know, him
addressing
men. And I'm like, and the cool part about it is it's not so like, it's not for shock value.
Right.
It's not set up like.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's nice to see his progression, certainly. Nice to not see an endpoint. Like, what can this guy do?
Yeah.
You know, so
yeah.
I like
totally. The complete, like, if he's a prospect, his ceiling is unimaginable.
Totally,
right.
Totally.
He's right. Gonna be like, which means we're going to be
Kareem standing on LeBron's shoulders. Yeah, totally, music,
totally.
You know?
And we're going to be totally disappointed by the next record. That's how this sets
I'm
up.
I'm probably going to like this.
Hopefully,
next year.
He makes like a Yeezus kind of like right, back right. to confrontation.
Right.
Kind
okay.
of
okay.
Like
after angry.
After his this is his my beautiful dark twisted
right,
fantasy.
Right. Okay.
Let's go into a Yeezus. Like let's
a
piss Yeezus, people off again.
Industrial provocateur.
One thing I wanted to say, just to kind of put a point on what we were talking about with the use of his use of language early in his career, I don't think his fans were taking it in a nuanced way.
No.
So I'm agreeing with you on that point.
Yeah.
Like,
Somebody got jumped. Let's just put it this way. Some poor kid got jumped off of somebody listening to Odd Future and, you know, F-bomb, F-bomb, F-bomb. Look, this is the sea that we swim in. And I know folks, you know, kid me about this, but nothing here is said to say that you're a horrible person because you know this lyric and you've said it. I mean, you know, we're all kind of working through these things. But
sure.
I'm happy to see that he's kind of made this transition where that's not the crux of his work.
Totally,
anymore.
Not at all.
You know
anymore.
What I mean?
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. So he's kind of on another plane.
Well,
and
also, you know, he's aging and growing.
Yeah,
totally.
Before our eyes. So, I mean, that Odd Future stuff, they were fucking kids.
Yes.
We were seriously. Adults listening to kids.
Yes.
And, like, judging them through our viewpoint.
No, that's true.
So.
That's true. And they're kind of maturing. And I mean, what a collective. Just when you look at, you know.
So much talent.
I'm definitely into the internet a lot. Yeah. And I go, the roots, you know what I mean? I may even go back and listen to that Bad Earl album because I really feel like
there's
like,
no such thing as a Bad Earl album.
I don't know
what you're referring to.
No. All right.
It's art, man.
Oh, so Nate. Nate LeBlanc. don't you?
That's
don't
art
you?
Rap, dude.
And wait, what are we talking about?
Honestly,
right now?
Damone,
some
go
rap songs.
Listen to Standing on the Corner,
dude.
The group that heavily and Mike, the rapper. Like it's Navy Blue and Mike. They're the two featured mm-hmm. artists on there, and then like catch the wave of like what Earl is responding to,
interesting.
And like what like where his artistry is taking him, and like what like why it's dissonant.
Yeah.
And you make artistic choices, right? And folks who understand context will go, this is referencing X. It's kind of like when you walk through an art gallery, If I don't like the shit. I don't like this shit. And I mean, maybe I'll come back to it. Maybe I'll come back to it one day, you know.
Yeah, it's divisive, I would say, in our world. Like there are a lot of people in our kind of like old head rap space that like just don't like it. And I'm not saying you have to like it at all, but I don't think it's a bad album.
He's making a set of artistic choices that I don't agree with and I don't think suit what he does.
Really?
I kind of feel like
the
colors that he's painting with, I see how that could work better for someone else. I really feel like that didn't suit him. And honestly, I've always felt like I don't know if he's saying anything super compelling to me.
I was never
a huge fan.
Yeah, I could not
agree. I could name so many lines that address really important things.
Shocking, divisive.
I know. I don't know what to say.
We're flipping the table over. Let's go back to the R&B wave, though. The one last thing I wanted to make sure we mentioned was the Shafiq Hussein.
Oh man,
record,
the
Loop.
I love the
That's
Loop.
My favorite of the. It's just a straight R&B record. He never made any pretensions to being a rapper.
It's got some. There's some verses. He raps a little bit.
Yeah,
there's verses kind of interspersed. I like his stuff. I think if you were into Erykah Badu's, and I think he produced on this record, Erykah Badu's Fourth World War record. This definitely comes out of that tradition. It's actually the record where she kind of coins the term woke. I stay woke. Mm. He did some production on that, I believe, and it's definitely out of that universe. I listened to, he had a couple kind of mixtapey things that were hinting at this stuff that he was doing, but super eclectic. You know, he's got Robert Glasper on the record. He's got Highest Coyote on the record.
Okay.
It's super R&B. But there's a rappy sensibility in there a little bit.
I was never into that Sa Ra shit. So I, you know.
It's definitely in that vein.
I kind of was. Like, I remember when that came out, I was like, this is really cool. It's kind of not for me, but like, I get what they're doing.
It's
and
smart
I think
and
also
be.
It has been like very influential. Mm, like yeah. that kind of changed music in a very like that and Jay Davey.
I was going to say
like,
and the
it
Jay
felt
Davey.
Like a yeah. like a turning point for music.
It's an intellectual type of R&B. It's very reverential to different eras, and it's very smart, but not at the expense of groove.
Right.
It definitely has that. And, you know, he uses drum loops. He samples. There's almost like a Beatles vibe that pops up sometimes.
Okay,
it's like it's
okay.
weird and Sgt. Pepper-y in a way.
Okay.
So, yeah, I definitely.
All right, well,
which actually came out that same weekend. I swear to God,
we're talking about
this
epic weekend.
go back on our thread because I did a thread of like, holy shit, all these records came out the same day. It was. Maybe the same weekend. It was the loop.
One weekend has accounted for all of the good music
of 2019.
Of 2019 so, and not the new Tyler record, which is divisive and it's making us argue.
Not as much as the Earl record. I almost got kicked out the room.
Yeah, I was speechless. I was left speechless.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's good to disagree. Otherwise, it'd be a boring podcast. But find me another podcast that's already doing Year of Best Ofs and also talking about the Beatles this much.
Exactly. Exactly. John. Only the content you get here. So looking forward, because we're only halfway through the year, what are the projects that you guys are anticipating?
Milo is debuting his new alias on
which
Friday.
Is?
Oh, wow.
Which is?
Rap Ferreira, or R.A.P. Ferreira, which is like basically his real name.
Okay.
So super stoked on that. He kind of just started dropping hints about that online today. So
he killed the Milo moniker.
He's not going to use the Milo moniker anymore. I don't know due to Yiannopoulos or not. But
there's a lot of Milos in the streamosphere.
Right.
There's a lot of Milos.
Yeah.
So
that's coming out on Friday. A little bit further in the future, we already touched on the Crime Apple and Mugs album. We can't wait to hear that. And then what I think will be a total game-changing turning point for their careers in terms of mainstream acceptance, there's a Griselda record coming out on JD.
Huge.
I think it's going to be huge.
So is the single with Primo, is that from that record?
I don't know. Because they're also talking about doing a full length with Primo.
Right,
but there's been this, they've been on Shady for 2 years and haven't really put anything out. Mm-hmm. So it's a West Side Gun, Conway and Benny record.
Right. Oh,
Shady.
All together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's the first kind of group project, and I think they're going to take over the world.
Yeah, that's going to be huge. I can't wait for that.
Wow. Okay. That's big. And then
it's actually kind of cool. I don't know. I don't think you guys have satellite radio, but I experience a lot of new hip hop through this methodology. Eminem has a channel, Shade 45.
Right.
Sway has his morning show, and there's a couple of shows on there, and they play Joyner Lucas like. So much.
Really?
So I never listened to it. And so it's like there's like new Eminem and Joyner Lucas all the time. But then every once in a while, there's like a Conway song.
Right.
And like
they play
the three best tracks from the Benny thing. They'll play some West Side Gun. I'm like, this is amazing. I'm hearing them on the radio.
Totally.
And it's like it's like weird branded radio from the guy who signed them and is invested in their career.
Yeah.
So it's it kind of is and kind of isn't like organic.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
right.
like. Mm-hmm. Someday we'll have to just reckon with the Joyner Lucas phenomenon. Like, it's not like he can't rap.
Well, I mean, maybe this would be a whole show of there are a bunch of guys who, by the technical definition of being able to rap, can rap that I never ever want to hear. I put Joyner Lucas in that category. Hobson is another guy.
Totally. Mm.
It's almost its own genre.
Right,
where it's like somehow
Ari the Rugged Man,
rah, yeah, great Twitter follow, yeah. There's just a whole bunch of guys that fall into that category. But I will say this: if Eminem, and I don't know if it's him directly, if his greatest contribution to this era is bankrolling
a Griselda record, yeah,
then I'm gonna have to forgive him for some of this stuff. it's wild how divisive is the wrong word. It's wild how much it is cool to shit on that guy. It's almost unthinkable.
That's the problem with getting successful in America,
right?
Like, we love to build you up. We love to tear you down.
Right.
And he's making some aesthetic choices that are very odd. Like, Logic?
So
read the room, dude.
Yeah, so him and Logic did a tune, which has to be the worst thing ever. But
terrible.
But yeah, but there's just a lane for that. It's like we hate it to death.
Oh, of course.
But there is a group of people for whom that is.
Of course. Well, look at J. Cole. Big deal. I mean, you know. Fuck. I mean, people love J. Cole.
Love J. Cole. And I'll say this, hey, maybe 2019 for me is a slight
Okay.
I'm backing off of J. Cole a little bit
this,
in my head.
This just came out, the song Homicide featuring Eminem. I'm looking at Spotify right now. Would you like to guess how many streams it has?
Okay, hold on. Okay. Give us an over under. Give us an over under on streams.
I need you to give me an over under because you are gonna be shocked at this.
Okay,
number.
So we're gonna on Spotify, we're gonna put the over under at 7 million. Is it well you can see
oh,
it.
Oh, it's more than 7 million. It's gotta be more
it,
than 7
It would
million.
Be 7 million in the first 24 hours.
God damn it.
Yeah. 71 million.
Fuck.
So we're wrong. And clearly the people who like Eminem and Logic are right.
Oh,
like
of course. I mean Eminem's
they're beloved
wow.
fast rappers.
71 like, million?
Yeah.
God, Logic just had that video where he's wearing army fatigues and rapping on tanks. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. And like and we're
give tanks, bro.
And we're you know, and we're all the like military people who are upset about Kaepernick, not upset about this.
Yeah, he's, because he's that's that
it,
is that is an offense
using
to the
it
military.
As a backdrop.
Oh, I'm so glad I looked at this stupid Logic page, which depressed me in a way, but it reminded me that my dude YBN Cordae has his full length coming out either on
oh,
Friday
right.
or next Friday. I'm super excited about that. Huh.
So it's interesting you brought him up because I like him. I think he has a foot in this lane.
I didn't bring it up for no reason.
Okay.
He can appeal to these fans.
Yeah.
He has the raw rapping ability and the charisma to appeal to this set of
you
fans
know who's
who
a
like,
big who's
like
a
undergroundy but actually just straight up mainstream. Rap,
right.
Yeah, yeah,
right. He can be a big rapper.
Well, I mean, fuck, Yellow Wolf sells millions of records, dude.
I know.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
there's all that lane is not where.
Well,
my eyes are.
You know who digs this stuff though is LeBron James. So there's a bunch of videos of him like spitting
yeah.
Joyner Lucas stuff, like
yeah.
word for word. And
I
like,
just saw, a
and
really
I'm like,
funny
that's
tweet.
Why that's why you at home.
Yeah, that's. I just saw
that's
a really
why
funny
you at
tweet.
Home.
They're like, this is why we wouldn't let him in the playoffs.
although you know, Steph has to have. Some of the worst music taste. Like you hopped in his ride. This
Christian
guy's got.
Rap, dude.
He's got. Yeah, he's got every version of Christian rap.
Who's the
Lecrae?
Yes,
Lecrae is
his
Jay Z.
Right?
Yes,
yeah.
For sure.
Crazy.
Who on the Warriors would you say had the best music taste? Just by looking
Zaza.
At
Zaza. No, I'm just kidding.
Draymond.
Nope.
Yeah.
No way. Draymond has. Terrible music.
What does he listen to?
Yeah. You have a playlist or something?
He listens to Playboy Cardi and shit like that.
I'm not mad at that.
Yeah.
What would you expect him to listen to? He's
nothing.
A rich young man. Like
No.
I was asking the
question who had the best.
Oh, are you
music.
Saying like who has closest to ours?
Yes, Nate.
Because like
that's what
history
I mean.
Will judge the people like who listen to the successful shit, right? Like that's what I was just saying about the Logic. Like they're right.
I mean best by sane people terms.
Jonas Jerebko. No, I have no idea. Does anyone on the Warriors have good music taste?
I think Iguodala. I think who would Iggy. If you hopped into their ride and you rode with them and you're like, oh, this isn't
well,
really annoying.
I he's way too young for this, but I feel like he like listens to like George Benson or something. Like
he's only 35, bro.
I know, but he's like a venture Benson. Capitalist. He reads like self help books, like
that's
he's
hilarious.
The guy who got the Twitter handle at Andre. Like, he was first. You know what I
the
mean?
First Andre? Fuck.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'm sorry, Andre, if you're listening to this.
You're not listening to this. But no. I would love to know what you listen to. He quoted a bunch of Kendrick lyrics on Twitter.
Don't they all like Kendrick, though?
Yeah, I mean, everybody likes Kendrick. Kendrick is huge, but...
Yeah, I would say maybe JaVale, even though he's an ex-Warrior.
Right,
since he
Pierre.
Was a producer. Yeah, Pierre.
Yeah, totally.
He makes his own stuff.
Yeah.
No, I think it could be interesting.
It's not terrible.
Did you hear some of the Pierre?
We listened to some Pierre SoundCloud a couple years ago when he was on the Warriors. It is not terrible.
Okay.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you
it's
have
better
it.
Than Chris Webber's music.
Yes.
Ouch. Are you dissing the Mid-Coast All-Stars?
That was a tough time.
You guys don't like Kobe's bars, dude?
Oh, man. No, it's been a very, very fruitful time for the NBA, for rap. And we're here for all of the above. We're excited. Did we mention the Mad Gibbs record? Did I space out?
No, no. Bandana, right?
Looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be good.
Flat tummy tee is already like a tight cut.
Yes. So, and that's coming out like soon, right? So
I believe any Friday now.
Okay. Okay. So,
what am I putting?
So,
bandana.
big records coming out. I feel like in closing, can 2019 at the end, will we be like, oh shit, this was as big as 2018? Is it possible?
I think no, because there will be no Wyoming series of records. Right. Like that drove, even though one of them ended up being good, it drove so much conversation
and it
inspires the other artists to be like, no, fuck that. Yeah. Like, that's your shot. Yeah. I got my shot.
Are you
like,
ruling out a Kanye train wreck release cycle? There's still 6 months.
The latest thing I saw is that, he did that David Letterman interview series thing on Netflix, and he tripled down on, like, the Trump and MAGA shit, which is disgusting and hurtful. And B, he wants to save the world with Sunday Service. So I think that's what's going to be like doing, like, weird OJ's flips with his MPC in the middle
that's
of the field.
That's what we get.
Is, like, going to be getting. What he's going to be working on for the next little while.
Okay. All right.
The worst part of Kanye, too, I also heard he, like, really dissed Kris Jenner's boyfriend, Corey Gamble. And it's tearing the family apart.
Man, Nate with the news.
Yeah. Nate here on E! News. Entertainment Tonight featuring Nate LeBlanc. So I think whether you like Joyner Lucas or you like some rap songs or you like Igor, rap is alive and well.
No. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I was kidding.
The depth and breadth of what's happening in the genre is really fucking exciting. And why I kind of feel like, you know, we had this disagreement about Earl. I'm fine with like large scale disagreements. There used to be this idea that there was one set of rappers and material that was dope.
Right.
It wasn't broad enough where you could like really disagree and just be like, well,
rap is,
you fuck with that. I don't fuck
rap
with
is
it.
More diverse than ever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That can only be a positive.
And most of it's R&B.
It's so diverse. It ain't even rap no more.
Yeah.
So we're here for all of it. We will continue to assess and critique all of the above. If you want to be part of the argument and you also take umbrage to my feelings about Earth Sweatshirt and some rap songs, hit us up at DadBodRapPod on Twitter, also on IG. If you want to see ephemera from Nate's house, that's at DadBodRapPod. You know, if you're on Facebook, whatever, I'm not sure.
We'll throw a post very occasionally.
Yeah, we've been actually putting out some lightweight, decent Spotify playlists. So if you hit up our Facebook page, you can see those. You can find this podcast wherever motherfucking podcasts are at. Please like, rate, subscribe to the shit. We appreciate y'all. Dead by Rap Pop.